I would like to pose two questions, if I may. The first one is my consideration about the supplies of S-400s on Turkey. I know you already mentioned the importance of Turkey as an ally at the NATO cooperation and the defense in the Mediterranean and the Aegean. However, does this supply worry NATO and the West, and how should we react to that? And the other is a more personal question, if I may. As a woman who is in a leading position, you may have faced a lot of difficulties. I guess it is quite interesting for us young women to hear all these difficulties and maybe a few advice, if you may. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon.
Hello, over here.
I may introduce myself in my mother language, if I may. Σας ευχαριστούμε πάρα πολύ που ήρθατε. Είναι τιμή μας. Ονομάζομαι Καραμπάτου Σταυρούλα. Είμαι τεταρτοετής φοιτήτρια του Πανεπιστημίου Πειραιώς στο Τμήμα Διεθνών και Ευρωπαϊκών Σπουδών. Το ερώτημά μου... Συγγνώμη. Με ακούτε τώρα? I'm sorry for the inconvenience. I'm sorry. As I said before, το όνομά μου είναι Σταυρούλα Καραμπάτου. Είμαι τεταρτοετής φοιτήτρια του Τμήματος Διεθνών και Ευρωπαϊκών Σπουδών στο Πανεπιστήμιο του Πειραιός. Και η ερώτησή μου έχει να κάνει με κάτι πάρα πολύ συγκεκριμένο. Πέραν του εξοπλισμού της Τουρκίας που βλέπουμε, βλέπουμε και μία επιθετική στάση της Τουρκίας γενικά στην Ανατολική Μεσόγειο, καθώς και στην νότια πλευρά της και αφορά την Κύπρο και την Ελλάδα μας. Ποια είναι λοιπόν η θέση του ΝΑΤΟ προς αυτήν την επιθετική τάση, εφόσον βλέπουμε ότι η Τουρκία δεν μένει εκεί και μπορεί να εμβολίζει και όλες ελληνικές κτεωρούς εντός ελληνικών υδάτων. Και ευτυχώς δεν θρηνήσαμε θύματα. Σας ευχαριστούμε πάρα πολύ.
Honorable Deputy Secretary General, I am Yanis Kouliaras, undergraduate student at the Department of International European Studies in the University of Piraeus. The last decade in international and European affairs has been marked by the reemergence of Russia as a regional superpower, or at least a very powerful and influential state. Well, what are the future versus widespread belief that we have entered a new Cold War period? So I wanted to ask, what are the future prospects in the relationship between NATO and Russia, considering the new challenges posed by the rise of China and other developing countries, as well as issues of transnational nature, like terrorism and organized crime?
Good evening, Your Honorable Deputy Secretary General. My name is Mariana Riga and I'm a pre-graduate student in the Department of International European Studies in University of Piraeus. And my question is, you mentioned earlier in your speech that NATO is not only for the grown-ups and those on the verge of retiring, but also for the young people. So what exactly does NATO do for young people and what are the opportunities that it has to offer? Thank you.
Thank you for those excellent questions. Starting again with the S-400, I really did emphasize, and I will emphasize once again, that from NATO's perspective, listen, all of the allies make decisions about what weapon systems they're going to buy, what hardware they're going to buy, what equipment they're going to buy. That goes for every single ally. It's your sovereign decision to buy what you determine, you know, you need. However, NATO does have a system of cooperating together among the allies to develop what we call capability targets. So all 29 allies work together with NATO staff, with our military as well, to develop capability targets. And so that's to try to ensure that the acquisitions across the alliance are, coming back to that word I used with regard to EU, are complementary, that they fit together in a way that maximizes the defense effectiveness for all. And historically, it hasn't always been the case that NATO allies have accepted all their capability targets. But in the last year, in 2017, all 29 NATO allies embraced and accepted the capability targets. So we thought that was a really good development, that everybody was essentially going to be, it's not like a treaty commitment or something like that. We cannot, in the end of the day, demand, we as NATO, but that each of the NATO allies accepted these targets as the right way to spend defense resources. That was very, very good. But then allies have some other decisions they make about capabilities to acquire. In those cases, as in the S-400, we really, and I emphasized this when I was in Turkey back in January, we really, really believe that it's good for each country's defense and greatest defense effectiveness if systems are interoperable, if they can operate with NATO systems. And the S-400 is not interoperable with NATO systems. So, of course, it's Turkey's sovereign decision what they want to buy. But from our perspective, and we continue to argue, it's important to look for maximum defense effectiveness. So that's just adding to my previous answer. That's what I'll say about that. Advice for young women, but it's advice for young people overall. It's the thing that I found to be the most useful thing to remember as I was coming into my career and developing my career. It's very simple advice, and that advice is never apologize. Young people, and you may have experienced it, I'll just tell you a little vignette how I came to this, because many of you are in graduate school. When I was in graduate school, I came into a seminar one night. It was on some technology matters. My professor asked a question. I raised my hand, and he's called on me. And I started by saying, well, I don't know much about these technological issues. He said, stop right there. Never apologize. Just say what you want to say. So I gave the answer I was going to give, and he said, perfect answer. Why were you apologizing? You got it right. So that advice has stuck with me throughout my career, and it has served me very, very well. That goes for everybody around the room, old as well as young. Never apologize. Just say what you have to say. So that's my best advice, I would say. Now, the next question, question with regard to Turkey and their stance in the Southeast Mediterranean. I understand there have been issues I've heard about in the Aegean Sea as well. I want to stress, first of all, that we have seen some, and I mentioned it in my own remarks, we have seen some excellent cooperation between Greek and Turkish coast guards in dealing with the flow of migrants, working together with the NATO naval assets that have been brought to the area, and also with Frontex. So we have an excellent real-time example of how we have all been able to work together to deal with a major challenge to Europe overall. So I like to say let's keep that example front and center as we continue to deal with some difficult issues overall. NATO, we like to emphasize for all of the allies that NATO is a big family. As you know, any family is not without disputes. You can end up arguing with your parents. You can end up having some tough words exchanged with your spouse. I think about NATO as being a family. There are going to be disputes between and among NATO members, and there have been historically some very, very difficult ones. But the point is to try to deal with them in as problem-solving a way as possible. And that's the message that we convey from NATO headquarters. The Secretary General and I, the rest of NATO leadership, let's try to be talking together. Let's try to do what we can to solve this problem in the first instance between and among capitals. It doesn't matter whether it's Athens and Ankara. It doesn't matter whether it's Washington and, I don't know, Paris. It doesn't matter. But let's try to solve it in a pragmatic and problem-solving way and as in as low a key way as possible. And if necessary, and at times, we from NATO headquarters do our best to try to help. We do our best to try to facilitate the solution of serious problems. But I really do like to emphasize that that, as a general principle, is how NATO has to operate. Again, we are an alliance that operates through consensus. So around the table of the North Atlantic Council, 29 countries sit in Brussels, and we have to, anything we have to do by getting everyone to agree it's the right thing to do. And that's an important, I think, lesson in how to try to resolve larger disputes, because it's hard. It takes a lot of heavy lifting. It takes a lot of talking at times, but eventually, we do get to the decisions NATO needs to make. There was a question about NATO and the Russian Federation and whether we are entering into a new Cold War, future prospects for NATO and Russian Federation cooperation. I will say as a first matter that NATO, from our perspective, we are pursuing a two-track policy, that we are working hard to ensure deterrence and defense because of those actions in 2014 when Russia seized Crimea and began to destabilize the Donbass. We really, really found it important to take some strong decisions about providing for deterrence and defense, and NATO has done so, putting in place after the Wales Summit in 2014 and the Warsaw Summit in 2016, four battle groups in the Baltic states and in Poland, and also developing reinforcing capabilities to back up those battle groups. So deterrence and defense is very important, and we must have strong capabilities in that regard. But the other important track is a dialogue track. We need to continue a strong dialogue in order to have the ability to enhance predictability, to enhance mutual confidence over time, and to deal with incidents. Heaven forbid, we don't want an accident or an incident, for example, flying over the Black Sea or in the Baltic Sea. We don't want that to turn into a crisis. And so having a good dialogue track and open and transparent communication is very, very important as well. Final thing I'll say on whether there's a new Cold War or not, I think it's very important to focus on the differences with the Cold War. Just by way of example, during the Cold War years, the United States had up to 400,000 troops deployed, permanently deployed in Europe. That meant they were there with their families, that meant they were there, you know, their kids went to school there, they were living there. They were permanently deployed. The United States has now 62,000 troops authorized to be in Europe, and they are in Europe on a rotating basis. They are not there in permanent deployment. They are coming and going. That's a fine example of how we are trying to be judicious about deterring and defending at this moment in history, but not returning to the Cold War. And the United States, among all the allies, I think is providing a great example of that. By the way, they are deploying a limited number of troops on a rotating basis, but strongly backing up the deterrence and defense that the allies as a whole have decided is necessary at this moment. So a few points on that. And final question is my favorite one on which to end, and that is NATO opportunities for young people. If you are interested, we have internship programs at NATO, both on the military and the civilian side. NATO has the international staff and the international military staff, so there are opportunities for young people. If you haven't checked into it and you would like to, there's information on the NATO website. I strongly urge you to apply. We love having the interns at NATO because they bring so many new ideas and really help us, as I was saying, to start thinking about the future in a more decisive way. Also, I know that each of the NATO allies have interns in the missions in Brussels, so you might also approach your own government, the Greek government, and I don't know the details of those programs. Perhaps Terry does, or others here at this table can help to inform. But there are several ways that you can come and see what NATO is all about and really help us to move into the future. So thank you very, very much.